Flying can be a lot of fun, but you never know what the outcome of a flight is going to be. Just imagine it's 1947, and you're sitting in the cramped cockpit of the Bell X-1, the research airplane designed to break the sound barrier. And nobody knows if the sound barrier can be broken, but you've got a hunch it can be broken. But there are a lot of good aviation people out there who think that airloads go to infinite at the speed of sound. Now, that makes you a little bit unsure. And you're facing a tough opponent, really the unknown. And you've just been dropped from the dark bomb bay of a B-29, and then the sunlight's blinding. And the X-1 is loaded with liquid oxygen and alcohol and is gliding like a rock. About 500 feet below the mothership, you reach for that rocket igniter switch. Now, if you're going to be blown to bits, this is when it'll happen. But you light all four chambers in rapid sequence. And you're pushed back in your seat as the engine gives you a tremendous kick in the butt. You pull your nose up and hold on as you take off like a bullet for the dark part of the sky. And the only sound you hear is the instrumentation and yourself breathing. The P-80 that's flying up ahead of you, which is a chase airplane, grows bigger in your windshield. You pass him like he's standing still, and he tells you he sees all the diamond-shaped shockwaves leaping out of your exhaust. Now, the X-1's power is awesome. You've never known such a feeling of speed while pointing up in the sky. You climb at a Mach number of about 0.92 and level out at 42,000 feet and turn off two of the four chambers so you don't accelerate so fast. Up here, the morning sky resembles dusk. You turn on a third rocket chamber and accelerate out to 0.96 Mach. All that you can think about is, man, what a ride. Then the Mach needle begins to fluctuate, and it goes right off the scale, and the Mach meter only goes to 1.0. So if you extrapolate, the airplane has reached out to about 1.06 Mach number. You get no buffeting and no bump in the road or anything to let you know you've just punched a clean hole through the so-called sound barrier. You've encountered the unknown. You realize that breaking the sound barrier was nothing more than a poke through jello. There wasn't anything keeping us from flying faster than the speed of sound, except our own ignorance. Hi, it's Chuck Yeager. Welcome to my advanced flight trainer. We're here together because you want to fly an airplane. Well, that shouldn't be a problem. You've got at least three things here to help you quickly learn how to fly. My instructions programmed right into the software, more lives than a cat, and more planes than you can destroy in many afternoons of flying. And the odds are real good that you'll get up into the air today, and even better, that you'll come down again. We just have to make sure you don't leave a smoking hole where you land. The first all-important piece of advice that I had to give you is never rely solely on what another pilot tells you about how to fly. And I'm not going to tell you everything there is to know about flying, and I couldn't even if I wanted to. The only real way to learn is by doing it yourself. Experience is everything. Anyway, it gives you something else to do other than just listening to me talk. So fire up the Advanced Flight Trainer right now using the instructions in the manual under the chapter Getting Started. While you have your manual open, you might also want to take a look at the basics of flying to get an idea of how airplanes actually fly. Now, if you're a little fuzzy on that point, turn off your cassette player now, and I'll wait for you to get caught up. Okay, let's go for a little ride. We want something fast and fun, so let's take up the XPG-12. Hopefully, you've got the machine booted already, and you're looking at the menus. So highlight the main menu bar and pull down the missions file. Now highlight Demo Flight and press Return. Now I'll fly this time and you can just sit back and soak it in. This should help you get a feel for some of the instruments in the Advanced Flight Trainer. Watch the Artificial Horizon instrument on the panel. The Artificial Horizon tells you how you're flying relative to the horizon. And notice how, when we bank, the horizon on the indicator goes vertical. When I roll the aircraft, you'll see the white part of the instrument shift to the bottom. That means we're flying upside down. Now look at the gauge marked VSI. This is a vertical speed indicator. It tells you your rate of climb in thousands of feet per minute. It does this by measuring the change in air pressure as you go up or down. Notice how it tends to fluctuate a lot. And don't trust this instrument too much to tell you whether you're heading up or down. It's better to keep an eye on your altimeter. That's the gauge in the middle with the letters ALT on it. The information on this instrument is critical. It's the only way you know exactly how high you are. Needless to say, you don't want your altimeter to read zero if you're not trying to land. And notice how I pull my nose up when I'm cornering. This is to compensate for the natural loss of altitude caused by the turn. Even though I'm pointed up, I'm not losing or gaining altitude. Eventually, you want to be able to do the same when you're flying these maneuvers. Keep your altitude steady so you don't end up straying out of the canyon or drilling a hole in the ground. Another important instrument on your panel is your airspeed indicator. You've all experienced automobiles, so you know what speed is. The increments are different, though. Airspeed is measured in knots or by a Mach meter. A knot is slightly more than a statute mile, and for our purposes, Mach 1 is about 760 miles per hour if you're at sea level. It may seem like there are a lot of instruments on that panel, and there are. But remember, we're moving in three dimensions, which makes the entire process a little more complex than rolling down the freeway. Now get to know all your instruments, but as a beginner, you should concentrate on the altimeter and the airspeed indicator. And with experience, you'll find you won't have to rely solely on your instruments. As a rule, beginners tend to rely too heavily on the instruments. Intermediate pilots are always ignoring their instruments too much. To become an advanced pilot, you have to learn to walk the line between these two extremes. Good flying becomes a natural thing. For instance, you're flying level just by keeping your eye on the real horizon that's in front of you. But when you can't see it, you'll refer to your instruments. Likewise, when you're landing, you'll gauge your distance from the ground by looking out your window, not just at your instrument panel. As you approach the ground, you'll see black balls that are the all-purpose terrain and advanced flight trainer. The balls grow larger as you get closer to the ground. A good pilot will land more accurately by using these than just using the altimeter. You can also get a pretty good sense of how fast your approach is by keeping your eye on the terrain even though you refer to your airspeed indicator. Pretty soon you'll find yourself in sync with the machine. In fact, so plugged into your controls that your mind and your hands become the heart of its operating system. You'll make that airplane talk, and like a good horse, the machine will know when it's in competent hands. There are more instruments on your panel that need to be explained, but we'll wait until you get your hands on them. In the meantime, just turn me off and open up your manual to controlling AFT planes to learn the commands to fly the advanced flight trainer planes. I'll just wait here until you're done. Okay, let's get you up in the air and flying. Now, I'm going to come with you, so don't sweat it. Heck, at least you'll have a flight instructor with you. I sure remember my first morning in the cockpit of a fighter airplane. World War II had just begun, and a small group of us were training out in the Nevada desert to be the 363rd Fighter Squadron. I climbed into the cockpit of that P-39, and the squadron leader explained all the switches to me. He says, "Okay, Jaeger," he said, "when you take off, raise the nose gear at 60 miles an hour, and it'll get airborne around 90 or 100, then raise your landing gear and keep her wide open until you've picked up some speed. Then cut the power back to cruise." And he said, "the same way on landing." He said, "it's no problem." Then he slammed the cockpit door and signaled me to fire up the engine. And that was the end of the instruction. "But don't worry, though, I'm not going to put you through that. But you are going to get up in the air. Now, move the highlight to flight training and press return. Now move the highlight to takeoff and press return. press P on your keyboard. We're now in a Cessna trainer, which is something like those old driver education cars. You know, a set of controls for me and one for you. Here's how the controls work. In the center of the windscreen are two squares. The smaller one is attached to your control stick, and when you move your control stick, that square will move. The larger square is my control stick. For now, you just want to keep your square inside of mine. I'll actually control the airplane, but by keeping your square in mind, you're going to learn how to take off. Now take a look at the right side of the windscreen. You'll see two lines. This is the throttle position. And as you may have guessed, the longer line is my throttle, the one that's actually hooked to the airplane. The shorter line is your throttle, the one you're going to follow mine with. When you climb into the cockpit, take a moment to look around. Now on your left is a brake switch and the altimeter in hundreds of feet. Moving to the right, you see the airspeed indicator in knots and the artificial horizon. Next is your compass, then the vertical speed indicator in hundreds of feet. On the far right is a landing gear switch. In the center below the gauges are two levers. One is for the flaps, the other is the throttle. Now, go ahead and press P again on your keyboard. Following my cue, increase your throttle to 100% by using the plus key. Now hold a stick steady and watch the airspeed indicator. When it reaches 80 knots, I'm going to pull the stick back. Keep your square inside mine. And go ahead and turn me off until you finish the flight instructions. You finished with the takeoff? Let's go up a few more times, only with you at the wheel. Now press the I key when you're ready to control the plane yourself. When you've mastered the takeoff, you can learn how to land the plane the same way, by letting me guide you until you get the hang of it. Work your way through all the basic maneuvers and combinations in flight school, climbs, dives, turns, and so forth. Until then, turn the tape off. Congratulations on passing your solo. Now, if you're like I was, you've probably already taken your plane out for a joyride or two. And I can never understand a pilot who could walk by an open cockpit and not want to crawl inside and go for a flight. For me, an open cockpit is an invitation to have fun. That's the feeling that Ned Lerner and I wanted to convey when we made Advanced Flight Trainer. And we didn't want to bog the user down with a lot of buttons and nonsense. Sure, there's some of that in flying, but that's not what makes a pilot crawl into an airplane and risk busting his butt. He flies because he likes to fly. And Ned wanted to make a simulator that made flying fun. So he gave the Advanced Flight Trainer the best animation speed and controller response of any personal flight simulator. When you go to do a roll, the machine responds instantly. A good airplane handles that way, and a good simulator should too. You already know the basics of flying now, so you can branch out and try any of the planes in Advanced Flight Trainer. Take a look at the different planes. The earliest ones you can fly are the World War I aircraft. Now, they're similar to the Cessna you've been flying, except that they're cockier. The Cessna is stable, real forgiving to a beginner. Now, the Spad and the Camel, on the other hand, were designed to dogfight, so they had to be maneuverable and consequently were a little unstable. They're somewhat underpowered by today's standards and they don't climb very high, but the men who flew them were real pioneers. These earlier pilots developed most of the stunt maneuvers you see still performed today, and they did it in planes made entirely out of wood and canvas. That took a lot of courage. Still, one of my favorite planes is the P-51 Mustang, the plane that I flew over Europe in World War II. The P-51 was the best American fighter of the war, and she was a dogfighter's dream, equal to anything the enemy could put up against her. With her 2,000-mile range, her terrific speed, and maneuvering, she turned the war around by protecting our bombers all the way to the targets and back.